So when you picture real estate investing, you probably picture, I don't know, late nights, like scrolling through listings online, hunting for that one perfect property.
Right, the one with the ultimate cash flow.
Exactly. Because we are basically conditioned to look for the highest return or the most aggressive
Or
appreciation.
the absolute best cap rate, you know?
Yeah, which if you're new to the term, is just a quick way of measuring a property's natural rate of return. It is basically the annual yield you would get if you bought the place in all cash.
Right. It feels like a math problem. You solve the equation, you get the reward. It's treated like this purely objective science. People look at a spreadsheet and think the numbers are either universally good or they are, universally bad.
Like it's totally binary.
Yes, exactly.
But today's source material actually turns that completely upside down.
Yeah.
So if you are listening to this right now, we are going on a mission to shortcut your path to being a truly brilliant investor.
It's a really fascinating approach.
It is. And we are pulling from a text called 10, How to Align Real Estate Investments with Your Financial Goals. The core mission of this deep dive is to uncover a highly counterintuitive truth.
Which is that finding the quote unquote best real estate opportunity might actually be the worst thing you can do.
The absolute worst thing for your financial future.
Yeah, it is a radical shift in perspective, honestly. The fundamental premise of our source text today is that the most successful investors do not actually start by analyzing the market.
Right, they start somewhere else entirely.
They start by analyzing themselves. They understand that a property can be a mathematically excellent investment on paper. I mean, you can have all the right metrics, the perfect location, a great tenant, and still be completely the wrong investment for you.
Okay, let's unpack this because to actually build wealth, we have to completely tear down this illusion of the perfect property. We have to like shift our focus away from the concrete and the drywall and onto the actual people making the investments.
Yes, the humans behind the capital.
Right. It reminds me of a hiring process. Hunting for real estate investments without clearly defining your own financial goals is exactly like hiring a superstar employee just because they have an incredible resume.
Oh, that is a perfect way to frame it.
Right, like you bring them on board because they look great on paper, but you never actually defined what job you need them to do at your company.
Exactly. And the author of our source text admits to making this exact mistake early on. They talk about spending all their time comparing returns, reading market
And
reports,
looking at the resumes.
right, looking at the resumes, searching for things that looked undeniably attractive in a spreadsheet. But they weren't asking the foundational question.
Which is why am I investing in the first place?
Exactly. What do I actually want this capital to do for my daily life?
Which seems so obvious in hindsight, but I mean, when someone is waving a projected 15% return in your
It's
face,
hard to look away.
yeah, it is really easy to forget to ask if that return actually helps you achieve your specific life goals.
It is incredibly easy to get distracted by the math. The text provides a brilliant example of why the underlying intent matters so much here. Imagine two different investors looking at the exact same property. One investor is trying to create a supplemental source of income right now to help cover their monthly living expenses.
Like cash today.
Right. The other investor is trying to build a long-term retirement nest egg that they do not intend to touch for 30 years.
So they are looking at the exact same building with the exact same cash flow and the exact same purchase price.
The exact same. But they should logically reach completely different conclusions about whether to buy it.
Really? How so?
Well, let's say this property is a piece of raw land in a rapidly developing suburb. It produces absolutely zero immediate income because there's no building on it.
Makes sense.
But the historical data suggests it will appreciate wildly over the next 2 decades. The retirement investor might look at that and think it is the deal of the
Oh,
century.
I see. Because they don't need cash today, they just need massive value in 30 years.
Exactly. But the income-seeking investor is going to be incredibly frustrated by it.
Right. They buy it because the math looks great long term, but next month, when they need cash to pay their mortgage.
That dirt lot isn't cutting them a check.
Wow, yeah.
That is the trap. It's the same property, but because they are asking the investment to do two completely different jobs, the perfect choice is entirely subjective.
That explains why you can have two brilliant financial analysts arguing over whether a specific market is good or bad. They are arguing about the resume without defining the job.
Precisely.
But wait, isn't the dream to find the unicorn property? Like the one that gives you high monthly income and massive long-term growth and zero risk? Why can't I just hire the employee who is amazing at absolutely everything?
What's fascinating here is how the source text directly addresses that exact frustration. The author talks about reaching a point in their own journey where they felt constantly disappointed.
Because they couldn't find the unicorn.
Right. Every opportunity they looked at seemed to require a compromise. If a property gave highly reliable income, like a fully leased commercial space, it usually didn't offer massive speculative growth.
Right. It's stable but slow.
Exactly. And if another had explosive growth potential, it carried a high risk of failure or, you know, produced zero current income. They thought they just hadn't found that unicorn yet.
Because modern financial culture tells us the unicorn is out there if you just hustle hard enough and look at enough deals.
Right. But the author's breakthrough came when they realized that expecting one investment to do everything is fundamentally flawed. Risk and reward are mathematically tied together.
You can't have both.
No, you cannot have maximum security and maximum growth in the same asset. Instead, the text introduces the concept of an investment team.
Ooh, an investment team. I like that.
Yeah, you don't expect a single person on a soccer team to play goalie, midfielder, and striker simultaneously.
That would be exhausting.
Right. You have defenders to protect you. You have attackers to score. Investments are the exact same mechanism.
So you actively build a roster. You assign distinct mechanical roles to different pools of capital.
Yes. You might have some assets on your team whose sole job is to generate steady, predictable income to pay your bills today.
Like the defenders.
Exactly. You have others whose job is to sit quietly in the background, perhaps taking on a bit more risk, to grow your principal over many years.
The attackers.
Right. And then you have some that might never produce spectacular returns. They aren't the star players, but they have immense value because their mechanism provides a hedge against inflation.
So it's all about balance.
When you stop demanding that every investment be the star player that does everything, your decision-making completely clears up. You just ask, what job is this specific asset supposed to do for my team?
Here's where it gets really interesting. Because if we abandon this endless, exhausting search for the thrilling unicorn investment, what are we actually left with?
According to the text, we are surprisingly left with boredom.
Boredom. And that is actually a profound mechanical advantage. Like, we are all drawn to the flashy sports car, right?
Oh, absolutely.
In real estate, the sports car is the highly speculative development project in a trendy new neighborhood. It might double in value, or it might sit empty, run out of funding, and just drain your wallet.
But it makes for great conversation at a dinner party.
Oh, the best conversation. But what actually transports a family safely through life year after year without breaking down, it's the highly reliable, incredibly boring minivan.
The boring minivan of the financial world. I love that.
So mechanically, what does that look like?
Well, the minivan is the fully leased commercial building with a boring, established corporate tenant signed to a 10-year lease.
Okay.
It doesn't double in value overnight. You aren't going to get rich quick off it. But that rent check arrives on the first of the month, every single month, like clockwork.
Which is exactly what you need.
Right. And the text leans heavily into this psychological shift. The author notes that early on, they were drawn to those sports cars, the investments with huge projections and dramatic headlines.
Which is a very normal human impulse, right?
Yeah.
We want excitement.
It is totally normal. But with experience, they notice something profound. The investments that quietly did exactly what they were supposed to do, without any drama, compounded into the most valuable assets in the entire portfolio.
Wow. Even without the big headlines.
Especially without the big headlines. They aren't the topic of breathless conversation on social media. They just wake up every day and execute their specific mechanism.
They just do their job.
Exactly. They produce the yield. They support the long-term goals, and they provide this deep sense of consistency. The text argues that one of the ultimate luxuries in investing is finding assets that allow you to simply stop worrying about them altogether.
Complete peace of mind. You aren't checking interest rates every 5 minutes to see if the sports car is going to crash. You just know the minivan is going to start when you turn the key.
Yes. The author believes this is a lesson that truly only sinks in with experience. Building long-term wealth is rarely about hitting the lottery with one extraordinary opportunity. It is almost always about mechanically assembling a collection of these reliable, boring investments, giving them a clear purpose, and then just giving them the time to let compounding interest do its work.
If you are listening to this, I really hope that takes a massive weight off your shoulders. You don't have to find the magic ticket. You just need to build a solid, reliable team.
Exactly.
But if our goals are the ultimate filter for who makes the team, how often should we be reevaluating this? Because the listener's life today probably looks very different than it did a decade ago.
If we connect this to the bigger picture, time is the ultimate variable in all of this. The source text spends a lot of time on the timeline of an investor's life and how your goals must aggressively dictate your strategy.
Okay, so give me an example.
Think about an investor at age 30. They're usually focused on accumulation. They have a long time horizon, meaning if the market crashes, they have decades to wait for a recovery.
Right.
So their investment team is likely heavily weighted toward aggressive growth assets.
Like buying into a major renovation project on a distressed apartment complex.
Exactly.
It's risky. It doesn't pay out today. But if it hits in 5 years, the payout is huge.
Exactly the kind of play a 30-year-old might make. They are playing offense, but if you invest for long enough, your life evolves.
Things change.
Careers develop. You might have kids. Financial responsibilities pile up. Suddenly, retirement isn't just this vague concept 30 years in the future.
It's a very real approaching milestone.
Right. And as that happens, the mechanical priority naturally shifts. The 50-year-old investor starts caring less about aggressive growth and much more about stability, generating reliable income, and preserving the wealth they've already managed to build.
So the team has to change. Like, if you are 50, you might need cash to pay for your kid's university tuition next year. A stalled, risky development project is suddenly a total disaster for your current life.
That is the core rule the author highlights. Successful investing isn't about choosing one single strategy when you are young and blindly following it forever.
That makes total sense.
It's about letting your strategy evolve as your circumstances change. The 50-year-old might need to shift their funds away from that risky apartment renovation and move it into a fractional share of a stabilized logistics warehouse that pays a guaranteed 6% yield.
Got it.
An investment that made perfect mechanical sense in one season of your life might be completely inappropriate in the next. Periodic reviews of your goals aren't just good housekeeping. They are a fundamental requirement for success.
So what does this all mean? We know our goals are going to evolve, and we know we need this diverse, adaptable team of reliable investments. But historically, real estate has been a very clunky, unforgiving asset class.
Very illiquid, yes.
Yeah, like if you buy a whole building and your life suddenly changes, you can't just pivot. Selling a commercial property can take 6 months and cost you a fortune in broker fees. So how do we actually execute this adaptable strategy?
That brings us to the mechanics of how this philosophy is actually applied in the modern market, specifically through a structure highlighted in the text, fractional property ownership.
Wait, so instead of saving for 10 years to buy a whole building, you're just buying a slice of the pie?
Yes, exactly.
Does that actually yield enough return to matter? And how is that different from just buying into a REIT? Because people have been buying real estate investment trusts for decades.
It is a vital distinction, and it changes the mechanics of how you build your team. A REIT, a real estate investment trust, is essentially a giant mutual fund for real estate.
Okay.
You buy shares in a massive corporate entity that might own hundreds of properties.
Yeah.
It's like buying a ticket to a buffet.
A buffet.
Yeah. You get a little bit of whatever the chef decides to cook, but you have zero control over the specific assets.
Right. You're just along for the ride.
Exactly. Fractional ownership, on the other hand, is like ordering a la carte. Instead of buying a blind pool of properties, fractional ownership allows investors to look at one specific single asset, say a logistics warehouse in Riyadh, and buy 5% of that specific building.
Oh, that makes sense. So you still get the benefits of real estate, the yield, the appreciation, but you aren't tying up a massive amount of capital in a single illiquid asset.
Precisely. It provides the flexibility to maybe create just a small additional income stream or to gradually build exposure to real estate without betting your entire life savings.
Which is huge for that 50-year-old we talked about.
Absolutely. Yeah. Instead of trying to sell a $5 million building when your life changes, which takes months, you can simply adjust the smaller fractional shares in your portfolio. It lets you draft a specialized real estate player onto your team without blowing your entire salary cap on them.
Okay, but you can't just go buy a fraction of a commercial building on Amazon. Like, how do you actually vet these slices of property. This brings us to the actual frameworks being built to support this, because the text mentions this isn't just theory anymore.
No, it is actively being structured and regulated right now.
Well,
the text is very careful to point out that the ownership structure itself, whether it's fractional or wholly owned, is just a tool.
Right.
Its true value still completely depends on how well you understand the market and your own goals. To solve that problem, the source text highlights the work being done by Osol Gamma.
So they are actively building the infrastructure for this.
Yes. And what stands out in the text is that Osol Gamma places a massive priority on investor education.
Education, really?
Yeah. They recognize that because no two investors have the same timeline or risk tolerance, understanding your personal goals is just as important as understanding the real estate market itself.
That goes right back to the beginning of our deep dive.
Exactly. They're focused on helping people figure out what jobs they actually need their investments to do mechanically.
Which is why they put out the specific materials mentioned in the text.
Yes. The text highlights their educational resources by name. They use guides like Fractional Real Estate Investment Strategies for Saudi Investors.
And there's a second one too, right?
Yes. And Fractional Ownership versus REITs. Understanding the differences before you invest to help investors navigate these specific mechanical choices.
That's super helpful.
They want to ensure that people aren't just blindly chasing a promised yield, but are actually building a strategy that fits their specific season of life.
And doing it safely. Because anytime you introduce a new financial tool, the immediate question is always about security.
Which is why the text makes a crucial point about the regulatory environment. It notes that, where applicable, Osol Gamma's fractional offerings are currently being tested within Regier's regulatory sandbox.
For those who might not follow financial regulation, a sandbox is basically a safe, heavily monitored testing ground where new financial tools are stress tested by regulators before they are fully unleashed on the public.
Right. It highlights the structured, serious environment in which these new tools are being developed. That context grounds all this philosophy in reality.
So it's not just theory.
No, we aren't just talking about abstract ideas of building wealth. There are actual mechanical tools like fractional ownership and actual educational frameworks and regulatory bodies actively working to help you execute this.
It completely changes the paradigm. Like, you go from this exhausting mindset of, I need to go out and conquer the real estate market and find the absolute best property on earth.
Which is exhausting.
To a much more grounded mindset of, I need to carefully select specialized tools that serve the life I am trying to build right now.
Is the difference between being driven by the market's noise and being driven by your own purpose?
I love that.
When you use your mechanical goals as a filter, decision-making becomes so much clearer. You stop getting distracted by the flashy sports car opportunities that don't fit your timeline.
And you start recognizing the quiet, steady minivan investments that genuinely deserve a place in your portfolio.
Exactly.
Which perfectly brings us to the main takeaway of this entire deep dive. If there is one thing you remember from our conversation today, let it be this. A good investment on paper and the right investment for you are two entirely different things. A property might have the absolute highest yield in the city, but if it doesn't do the specific mechanical job you need it to do for your family, your cash flow, or your peace of mind, it is the wrong choice. Let your financial goals shape your investment decisions, never the other way around.
It is a lesson that can save you a lifetime of stress and underperformance.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for joining us on this deep dive. We hope it helps you look at your own financial choices through a totally different, much clearer lens.
This raises an important question. If your current investments were a team of employees and you had to conduct performance reviews today based strictly on the life you are trying to build right now, how many of them would you actually keep on the payroll?